Hey everybody, new Slackademic single out, and this one's actually a ska song.
Your brown eyes are black holes, they drain the blue from the sky. The orange light is...
The second single from our album Pass Fail is out, Amplify, and it is a love song. Ooh. You can check it out on all the streaming platforms, but if you really want to support the band, head to our Bandcamp page and pre-order the record. You can own it in whatever digital format you want. It's actually cheaper now before the record comes out. TheSlackademics.bandcamp.com.
So take my hand and plant your feet. One bounding leap, we will see our souls meet. To amplify.
Like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Come baby come, baby baby come, come.
Come baby come, baby baby come.
This kid's going to sleep allegedly like in kind of, in my eyes, like a really toxic, stressful environment that may not be great for their development. And
toxic because James Hetfield's going, yeah, right in front of him, basically trying to fall asleep. Yeah, that's stressful.
It is stressful. I just imagined like Kirk Hammett like stroking my forehead so I can fall asleep.
Well, that's
overnight.
Comforting in a different way.
Yeah, I don't
you
hate
like,
it.
You like Kirk Hammett, I guess.
I do. It's the eyeliner for me. Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Nevermind the Music. What are we going to talk about today, Mark?
My question to you, Nicole.
Okay.
Before I answer the question, did you have anybody named Zach or Matt in your fourth grade class?
I bet I did. I don't know about Zach. Yeah,
definitely not
have.
A Zachary at fourth grade. They've evolved into a Zach.
A Zach.
And
reinvention.
And a... elder millennial Matthew would for sure be a Matt.
Oh, multiple Matthews. We probably had like a Matthew G, a
but
Matthew
not Matthews,
S.
Matt.
Matt.
Or in Boston, sometimes Maddie.
Maddie.
Never Maddie in
Maddie
in
V.
San Diego, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, Zach.
Zach.
I do not remember his last name. He was in my class from time to time, elementary school, up through middle school. He was cool. He had cool hair. Eventually he had a mohawk in high school. Right.
Nice.
Around, like, later, by the time we were in middle school, he was the kid who saw Showgirls and told everybody about it, which was, like, NC-17 or something.
And there's so many, like,
and we're
veiled
like 12.
Saved by the Bell references in the story that I'm not going to dwell on.
Never seen it.
What? You've never seen Saved by the Bell?
No, I've never seen Showgirls.
Oh, gosh. I was about to storm out.
We just talked about Saved by the Bell.
All I've been talking about is Saved by the Bell.
That's right.
Lately. It's in one of my major talking
points. I have not seen Showgirls. Okay, I have not seen the... expanded universe. As
there's actually
discussed.
A real now like a cult following about Showgirls, and Jesse Spano, who's in it, that's not her real name. She said like at the time she was kind of embarrassed because it was not like a hit, but in hindsight there's so many people that love it, and like that's one of her more prized roles. I'm sidetracking.
I think 12-year-old Zach from middle school and elementary school saw it for
the boobs.
Yeah, more prurient, as they would say, reasons.
We're framing things different, but
okay.
We all know what
so
we're talking
this
about.
Is the kind of guy, why is this relevant? This is the kind of guy who knew about all the cool rock bands way before everybody else. Like, he was talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers or Nirvana or Metallica. He probably had an older sibling, right? That kind of thing. He would talk about the bands. He'd wear their t-shirts. He was in my class. He was definitely not in my Cub Scout troop, though.
No.
Right?
Zachary would have been, not Zach.
That's right. Zach leaves our story now.
Oh, what happened to
Zach
him?
Zach is a, I do not know.
We can find him.
He had a cool mohawk in high school. He was still that guy all through high school. I haven't seen him in 20 whatever years.
Well, Zach, if you're listening.
You're definitely too cool to listen. He exists, however, in our story as a signpost, as a marker of a kid that can exist in fourth grade, right?
Right.
Now, Matt was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Matt was more like a midpoint between me and Zach.
Okay.
He was cool, but a little less cool, right?
But still listen to Weird Al sometimes.
Well, so here's the thing. Matt, Mark, similar names. Also, his last name was so... He was permanently right before me in the alphabet.
Okay, I'll just say that. That's kind of fun.
Without saying what his name was, it was not Papani with no Y at the end. It was, however, as close as you could possibly get.
I'm following.
He was... in my Cub Scout troop. I don't remember if this is Bear or Weebelos level. Are you familiar? No. I barely remember.
I like the name Weebelos.
Weebelos.
Weebelos. Below you.
It's We Be Loyal Scouts, I think.
Oh.
It's like right before you become a Boy Scout. It's like the
grooming stage.
Before Arrow of Light. Oh, Jesus. Oy vey. Are we going to have a tricky Cub Scout sidetrack? All right.
Yes.
Your daughter's a scout, though, right?
She was a Girl Scout,
Girl Scout, not a unisex scout.
Not a unisex scout. They just call them scouts, I think, now.
Okay. So.
After all the problems.
So the reason Matt comes into this story and the reason Zach is a signpost.
Sure.
Matt mentioned liking boys to men once.
Oh.
While we were like probably at a Cub Scout den meeting or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Probably the beginning of fourth grade. This would have been Cooley High Harmony era, not Boys to Men 2 era.
Okay.
So early Boys to Men. I've mentioned it. Huge fan of Boys to Men.
Likewise. We're
in. But then around that time, guys like Zach started mentioning Metallica, Nirvana. This is, you know, think early 90s, 1991 or whatever. I really wanted to talk to Matt about Boys to Men because I could geek out with somebody else about how cool Boys to Men was. I like talking music, but never kind of had the guts because I didn't really know. I'm not really a good friend. Is this turning into a therapy session? Anyways,
Okay. Finally,
I got the guts during a carpool once. I asked him, there were other kids around, it's like four kids all going to some function. What's your favorite Boys to Men song?
Oh.
And here's why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah.
Silence. Awkward pause.
He didn't want to admit it around other people.
And that's the thing. And he finally answered under his breath, Under Pressure.
Maybe he was trying to give you like a little nod to stop talking about like, I'm under pressure right now, man. This is like social pressure to conform.
Well,
maybe
at the time, this moment terrified me, right? Because I'd found a connection, I thought, with this kid. That was like a kid that was cool enough that I kind of wanted to be friends with him. Didn't know him well, but only to find out that in that moment, at least among, you know, northern part of San Diego, the sort of suburbs within the city, Boys to Men weren't very cool among the fourth graders.
You came on too strong.
And I felt in that moment, the gulf between us widened, right?
He was like, I got to get away from this Mark P.
Now I look back with more empathy because he was terrified in that moment.
Yeah.
Because he had a favorite Boys to Men song.
Oh, and
he probably wanted to talk about it.
A niche one.
But I don't think that was a single. It was like, first song of Side B or whatever, something like that. I don't remember.
Like, it's a song that, like, if you like that Boys to Men song, you like Boys to Men. It's not just
it's a good song, too.
Surface level.
And so, in fact, we were actually closer than we ever could have been because we were both terrified.
But you couldn't, like, hug about it.
I found out why it was so awkward shortly after because we were, in my memory, it's around a campfire.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it was the daytime. So I'm like, whoa.
That's okay.
What the hell were we doing?
We're conflating.
Okay. And he started reciting lyrics.
Like,
telling us a story of a song. In the middle of this, like, Cub Scout activity, lyrics I had not yet heard, and this was not Boys to Men. And the lyrics in question. Ripping your pillow tight,
night, take my hand, off to never, never land. So, let me get this straight. Matt P.
Yep.
Was around a daytime campfire with the Weebelos, right?
According to my memory,
According to your memory. And as part of like scary stories we tell around the campfire
in the daytime,
he made the choice to like
sleep with one eye open, something like that. I don't think he went night quite in the way
but
that
he was in like
does.
A spoken word moment.
Yep.
He was reciting the lyrics to Metallica's Enter Sandman.
That's right. And
Do you feel like it was a way to like buck against your awkward car ride moment of Boys to Men? Like he was trying to save social face?
What I think it was a broadcasting of his coolness. Because the reason I tell all this story is that this, everybody, we're talking about Metallica's Enter Sandman from 1991, the Black Album, self-titled, right? This song was cool enough to put Boys to Men in the in their place as very uncool amongst the white suburbanites, but lame enough that fourth graders knew it.
Right.
And that's the awesome nexus. Like even Zach, cool Zach, he wasn't listening to Sonic Youth, right?
Which would have been cool.
Which would have been actually cool. Like if he were 16, knowing about the Chili Peppers would not have been that cool. But as a fourth grader, it was quite cool.
Right.
And so this song is this perfect nexus. And this album, to me, sorry, not sorry about the long story, is this beautiful nexus in 1991 of cool, not cool.
Mm.
Because fourth graders are reciting it at the campfire in the day.
Like the jamboree.
With the moms and dads around.
For clout.
But also, it was cooler than the like pop at the time. Right?
What would be the pop at the time of like 1991? Like, what would that have been? Like Whitney Houston?
Whitney Houston, I think of like
Mariah.
But also like there was dancey stuff like is I'm Too Sexy right now? Groove is in the Heart right now.
Red Said Fred?
Right Said Fred.
Is that
That's right?
Wow. Yeah. I'm awesome.
That's what I associate. Like, you're unbelievable. Stuff like
okay,
that. Probably.
Cool.
I might be off by a year.
But
that's,
like that
that's kind
area.
Of, that's more rock even than, I mean, it's like dance rock. Or like, you're from Boston. Isn't mm-hmm. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch around
I think
that time?
It might have been
that's
New
later.
Kids.
Oh, New Kids, definitely. Right? So
that Joey McIntyre. I've talked about the big buttons before. I think you edited it out, actually.
I didn't know anything about it. Yeah. So probably I was like, if I don't know it, must be deleted.
No,
I don't remember. We talked about NKOTB a long time ago.
NKOTB.
That's right.
Okay.
So where are you at with Metallica?
I like Metallica for sure. Metallica, I listen to still a lot. It's very unconventional. Like people would be surprised to hear that. But I don't like new Metallica. My friend Andy, he's probably not listening. But if he is, thank you. You've finally taken my advice and listened to my podcast. But when Donald Trump was coming up and he had the Make America Great Again red hats, Andy had a hat that said Make Metallica Great Again.
Oh.
And I think that that's where I land on it now.
Is it kind of like a Weezer thing or more extreme than that? Because we talked about in our Weezer episode, everybody listen to that. It was a fun one. We both, like everybody else, and not everybody else, Mac Kelly from Geekscapes can be so mad that I'm saying it. A lot of people fell off Weezer in the 2000s, right?
Right.
But that's not the same as the Saint Anger hate. Where, so like Metallica has all this drama in all the recording processes. And one of them is that album, Saint Anger. What year is that?
I don't even know what
Saint
you're
Anger
talking about.
Saint Anger is 2003. And it's the one, there's like no guitar solos. Because they were like, oh, guitar solos don't sell or something. And so Hammett can't play guitar solos.
But Hammett
more,
sells.
More. Sorry. To the point, Lars decides he doesn't want to pull the snare on the drum set, on the snare drum. So the snare drum is the one that goes, psh,
yeah.
right? And the
yes.
reason it goes psh, instead of bung.
Because it has the little things on the bottom of it.
Snare, yeah. Wire is on the bottom. And
oh,
so this is
that why it's a snare, called a snare drum?
It's a snare, a metal snare, and it creates this like noisy sound.
Like a tingly
and he pulled
sound.
The snare off for that record, and this is what it sounds like. This is the tune, Dirty Window.
Ew. Of like breaking news, he's a great drummer, but it's
breaking news. That's pretty annoying sounding.
That's
though.
Like
kong,
really,
kong, kong.
It just like is very dissonant to me because I know what it's quote right. supposed to sound like. I appreciate him trying to be a little bit avant garde and trying something new, but it sounds like he did it as like a dig to be fresh.
I think he did it to be fresh.
Yeah.
And it didn't go over very well with the fan base. So, and so I play that as an example of like, this isn't people falling off of Weezer and going, oh, I miss Pinkerton. This is people who are like, I hate the new Metallica album.
Yeah.
What?
There's a spider. There's a spider descending. Oh,
dangling
so
between us.
So Metallica.
It's a beautiful single thread web descending from the fan. Should we send it on a thrill ride and turn the fan on?
No, because it's going to...
It'll fly in your face. Are we going to be okay?
I'm going to be fine. I'm not scared of spiders.
It's hunting things you would rather not have in my basement.
I wanted to like get onto the mic and like crawl up.
Oh yeah,
because it's very like on brand with our episode. Like, will it or won't it attack Nicole?
Wow. Okay. Well,
maybe this is my villain origin story.
Didn't we have a turkey walk by in one of our other episodes?
There were so many turkeys. Yeah, there were like 12 turkeys in your neighbor's yard when I pulled up.
They feed them.
That's so stupid.
Really stupid.
Turkeys are like. Really dominant.
Shout out to my two doors down neighbors.
I hope they're listening.
Never
don't
met you
feed
before.
The wildlife.
Don't feed the turkeys. We have turkeys here, which is still weird.
It's clearing up.
Moving here from the West Coast. So, okay.
Sorry, I got distracted really easily.
So you don't like new Metallica, but you like old Metallica.
I honestly don't know enough about new Metallica to have a strong opinion, but I do like old Metallica. And what you just played, like, there's merit there. I didn't hate
it. It's cool. It's intense. It's just kind of an annoying drum sound.
I like Kirk Hammett. I think he's handsome.
Yeah.
Always did.
Okay.
That was the draw for me. And I think he probably still holds up, right?
I don't know. I haven't seen, I'm sure. Well, once handsome, always handsome, right?
I don't know. Okay.
So, I mean, it's hard to argue with like the run of Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Injustice for All, and then this album. As much as this is a turn away from the thrash metal, it's still a good album.
Would you call Metallica thrash metal?
Metallica were.
Like at that time.
I mean, the big four.
Mm.
You know, they really wanted to be able to do like the unholy trinity of thrash, like, you know, unholy trinity of early heavy metal, you know, Zeppelin, mm-hmm. Sabbath, and Deep Purple. But there are four, the big four of thrash is Metallica, Megadeth, which, you know, former Metallica guy starts, Mustaine, Slayer, and Anthrax.
Okay.
So they're definitely, when you listen to like, especially a lot of that Master of Puppets stuff, the really fast, almost punky, it's so fast stuff, that's thrash metal. Yeah, totally. Foundational thrash metal, and it's good. So, I mean, even this album, is a turn away from that, but like this album is not a thrash album, but some of them still cook. You know, like Wherever I May Roam, The Struggle Within, those songs are fast. They've got intensity to them. But then they have these slow, like heavy ones, right? Like Sad But True. Do you know this album? I'm just saying random album tracks to show off, or have you heard what I'm talking about?
I like recall these tracks.
Okay.
This isn't my favorite Metallica album, but I know it for sure.
But I guess one thing that this has, like Injustice for All has some slower moments, but a lot of those songs pick up the pace.
Yeah.
This has like The Unforgiven... Which
it's good.
You could, the bassist in my band would say it, Unforgiven, right? It has power ballads, basically.
Right.
Right.
I like
Nothing
that.
Else Matters. And they're good, right?
Nothing Else Matters is a great song. It's the only song I can play on guitar.
The opening.
Yeah, just the opening.
Because it has this boom, bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
But then it has that.
No, I can't do that. I can just do the first couple of bars.
All right. So you make it through this. There's about 14 seconds of beauty there.
Yeah.
Before the hard, all the hammer on and pull offs. So this is produced by Bob Rock, not Bob Ross, Bob Rock.
Okay.
Motley Crue, David Lee Roth, but also Michael Bublé and stuff.
Oh, how interesting.
But apparently a lot of conflict in the recording. I mean, this band, I think, is just attracts conflict.
But they've been together for so long. Maybe that's part of it.
I think so. I mean, you talked about weird recording choices.
Yeah.
If you listen to Injustice for All, which is everybody, the album before this, you can't hear the bass at all.
No.
Oh, when we were listening to the bass line in I Will Survive the other episode. She's like, I can't hear the bass. How about listening to the bass in One off of Injustice for All?
I don't even hear a bass.
You can't. I mean, I found, you can find on YouTube people artificially boosting it so you can actually hear it.
But darkness imprisoning me. All that I see, absolute horror. I wonder how subconscious those choices are, because their original bass player died.
Yeah, so Cliff Burton dies in this terrible accident, in
like a bus accident
in like Sweden or something on tour.
And then they replaced him,
Jason Newsted.
Great, but like young. He was like a young fan, right? That they pulled up almost.
I don't know if he was a young, I'm sure he was a fan, but I don't know how much younger or whatever.
He was young.
It feels like they were hazing him because he wasn't Cliff.
Or it feels like they didn't want to like honor the bass part so much because it would have done an injustice to Cliff.
Because they talk about, if you look into that record, once again, I'm bringing this up because Conflict and Metallica records, Spider's going up, climbing up. Wow, it's fast. They talk about having a really like hot mix and them telling the producer or the recording engineer or whatever, no, turn down the bass.
Because
turn
it
down
was the bass. Like and too activating for them. Maybe.
And they're just like, what do you mean? It sounds great. No, turn down the bass. Quieter, quieter. Like, so there's something hostile in there.
It's really, I
and
think
he
it's
wasn't
sad.
In the band forever. So he was in the band a few albums though.
Jason Newsted?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. So, who is their bass player now?
Trujillo? What's his first name?
What happened to Jason Newsted? He was so baby-faced.
The new bassist is awesome. Robert Trujillo.
Okay.
He's a new bassist, who I think was like a guy who totally was into Metallica, because he's younger at least by a decade than those guys. Anyways, this song, Billboard Watch.
Billboard.
Don't quite.
Billboard.
Billboard? Did I say Billboard?
I don't know. Billboard.
You're going to listen back and you're like, shit, he didn't say Billboard.
No, I tried to say Billboard, Billboard, but I fucked it up.
Number 16. Not 16. Bad for a metal song in 1991.
This song.
This album was a big hit too.
Huge.
I don't have the chart on that. Nominated for Best Rock Song Grammy in 1992.
All right.
Lost to Sting's The Soul Cages. Very different. Do you know The Soul Cages?
No.
Shout out to Mark S., lead guitarist of my old band Dream Hydra.
Such a fan.
He would be like, dude, you gotta listen to The Soul Cages. It's this concept album, and I have heard it, and it's a good album.
You guys love a concept album. Dream Hydra famously loves a concept album.
Definitely. Dream Hydra famously makes concept albums. So it's about Sting's father's death, and there's this sort of sailing story. In any case,
just to pause, there is a rising tide on the internet of fans that want a Dream Hydra reunion.
Yeah, well, Jesus, we're gonna have to give
if
the people...
you look at our Apple, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, but on the ratings and reviews, there's quite a few mentions and call outs for a Dream Hydra comeback tour.
They should stream the hell out of that album or whatever, and we'll be like, well, I guess we have no choice, right?
I think we can call to our fan base.
Right, for sure. So this song.
Okay.
You know, we already talked about Nightmares a lot.
Mm-hmm.
With
we did.
Bury a Friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super curious what you're going to want to talk about. I will be talking about cool key changes.
You love talking about key changes.
We haven't really, though, yet.
Not yet.
We've got some key change action this season. Season two, we're ready for it. We're
all about that circle of fifths.
We're talking about notes, but this won't be... That's right. This won't be as complicated as
some
the circle of fifths with tritones. It also won't be as notey as the Wonderwall, where I'm like, and then it's reflected above notes.
I love
that. A little more straightforward here. Where do you want to talk? You want me to start? You want to start?
I was going to talk... I have so much I could talk about for this song. So these are my like potential things I want to talk about.
Okay.
I want to talk about sleep hygiene.
That sounds weird, but okay. Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about catharsis in music.
Okay.
And then this song is really about like childhood anxiety and fears of the dark and like suppressed trauma.
Okay.
But I don't really know if I feel like talking about trauma today. It's too much. It's too heavy.
There's a spider like 3 feet in front of you.
I got the spider literally looming over me like the sword of Damocles. And I feel like if I start talking about trauma, it's just going to bite me.
It's too much.
And I'll become this awesome villain.
You want me to start and then see where the spirit moves you
great.
Once we get to you?
I would love
you?
To see where the spirit moves me. Yes.
All right. Sort of like, it's Mark unfair because he often leads with the thing.
Oh,
but on the other hand, I don't have the agility where I'm like, you know what, Nicole? that what you just said inspires me to have already queued up all these musical samples the day before. No,
it's all in my head. I'm just I like you going first because it helps me like make connections.
I'll at least start. We'll see where
okay.
we go.
Sounds good.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come baby come, baby baby come, come.
Okay, first let's listen to the opening of this song and see what kind of notes we're dealing with here. E minor is our key.
I bet you I could learn to play this on guitar.
It's rhythmically more complicated than Nothing Else Matters, but not really technique-wise much harder.
Mm. Right? It's hard for me to play the guitar because of my flautist fingers.
What does that?
So, like, my muscle memory, my hands can't, like, do the guitar things because they're used to doing the flute things.
They can learn.
Yeah, I don't
know. Wait, which, do both of your hands on the flute do keys?
Yeah.
Or the holes? Not keys, keys right?
They do have open hold flutes that have
like
keys
an
and
flute.
Holds.
Yeah.
No. It's like a modern flute, but there's holes in the key. So you have to, like, kind of like a saxophone. Like, you have to, like, cover the holes and press down at the same time. They're very hard to play.
I can't believe I just asked you, does it have holes or keys? When literally I've written flute pieces of music that have key clicks.
Right.
Where I want the clickies.
That's weird.
Clickies. Yeah, well, it's avant-garde.
Oh, sorry. We're not saying weird anymore. We're saying
big surprise. Once everybody...
Avant-garde.
I had to give a doctoral composition recital. So there's some wild... I had a flute solo piece where the flute is looping themselves through electronic, like,
that's cool.
I created like an electronic patch, you call it a max patch, mm-hmm. that looped them and transposed. It was fun. A lot of work.
Fun.
I probably would not understand if I looked up the electronic programming I had done. I probably wouldn't understand it anymore.
That's
so
okay.
Something strange about this little riff, easy as it might be to play. This is E minor, but we have a B flat. The doo doo is a B flat, not a B natural. We have too low of a note. Take a listen first to the notes and then I'll play the riff again. So that note is out of key. So we're setting up a duality here, a sort of comparison, a half step, B flat A, instead of a whole step, doo-doo, right? That mm-hmm. comparison, right? We good on half step versus whole step?
I totally get that.
Half step's one key on the piano,
and
right?
And like the reason it sounds kind of tricky is because B flat is not natural, isn't like naturally occurring in E minor.
No, it's not a native species.
Not a native species to E minor.
It is. It should be a B.
It should be a B natural.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it.
So B flat being too low.
Too flat.
Too flat. That's
like,
right. Yeah.
That creates this like tension that
we're
hearing.
Yeah. And we're gonna see where that goes. So
gotcha.
All right. Real quick. Plagiarism watch 2025. In 2003. Oh, don't worry. I actually have a sample this
great.
Time. It's not. Somebody find it. Members of the Crossover Thrash Band, another style of music, slightly different. Excel. Considered suing for plagiarism, but apparently didn't.
Okay.
Their 1989 song, so 2 years before this, Tapping Into the Emotional Void. First, let me play Enter Sandman. Tapping Into the Emotional Void by Excel.
I mean, it's tough. I like this. First of all, the title tapping into the emotional void is like, it's too much for me. Like, we get it. You know, we get it. You're edgy.
It feels like it's Nicole Bate a little bit.
It's like, yeah. All right, guys, cool. I think it sounds similar enough, but we know that that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because music, maybe Bach has a similar riff in one of his songs. Like, who even knows?
So I will say the rhythm is the sort of, if we could say, the damning thing. Da, 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 da. That is the same. The notes are interestingly off by a half step. Mm. And does that matter or not? The gesture, you could say in music, the gesture is the same, though. Mm. It's doing the same thing, but the actual notes are different. So compare not counting being... They're at a half step key like
that,
I think,
like,
is E flat
thing they do at the end. They do a little like,
well, yeah, that too. But even the da-da-da-da-da, take a listen. This is, if I adjust the keys so they're both in the same, instead of one being an E, one being an E flat. Here's the comparison. Right? Mm-hmm. So tapping into the emotional void goes B, A sharp. Pretend they're in the same key. Okay. Whereas the Metallica tune goes B flat A. So they're off by a half step and it's kind of creates a different vibe.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same vibe.
It feels like the same.
Anyways, it is so what
they,
it is.
They dropped.
I don't think they ever actually sued.
And like, that's it. Do you think Metallica gave them a bag full of money?
I don't think so.
Just to shut up.
I don't think so. Maybe they got some shut up money.
I'd take some shut up money any day. Well, I guess that's not entirely true. I redact that.
Would you? Yeah.
It depends on what I'm shutting up about, I think.
Right.
It really comes down to that.
You're pro NDA, you're pro...
No, I'm pro bags of money.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. Which is why you're podcasting about music and psychology.
Yes.
So...
Any minute now.
Shortly, our famous, very famous riff will add more notes to it. What I want to draw your attention to is that last note. Da 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 da.
Mm.
Which is supposed to be F sharp in this key. Here's F sharp. But it's F natural.
Yeah,
da 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 da. So that too is two flat. We have a B that's two flat to B flat. And an F sharp, which is E minor, that's two flat to be F natural, right? So we have two lowered notes. Remember when we were doing Kiss from a Rose and I played you like the major
right,
or the
we
minor
were trying
version?
Trying to figure out if it was major or minor in terms of it's both and nothing all at the same time.
Here's what this riff sounds like with the lowered notes. And then here it is with the actual in key notes.
It sounds like a bad ringtone.
It's almost major sounding, right. Even though there's no major notes, but it's those raised things feel wrong, right? So this song is setting up a preference towards lowered half steps.
Okay.
Not whole steps. We don't have B going to A. We don't have F sharp going to E. These are whole steps that get smashed to be flattened notes. So let's see what happens when we hear the full riff and how that full riff ends. So that ending there, we get our F sharp. Do, 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 G to F sharp. We are definitely in E minor. This isn't some weird mode. We get the F sharp finally at the end. It's sort of filling the space between G and E with the F sharp. Now, do, 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 do. So once again, here's what it sounds like the way they play it. And here's if we kept the F in F natural, if we kept it lower. That's almost the more metal one. Oh,
right.
It's so dark. But they brighten it up a little bit at the end. And so once again, we have like a contrast, a duality between half and whole step.
Hmm.
Sometimes it's half lowered. Sometimes it's natural. And then we get the whole step.
And it's like priming us to, because we're getting so used to this shift, when it sounds like how it's quote supposed to sound, it doesn't sound right in the context of this song.
But it's weird because it starts out one way and then flips for one measure to be the other way, right? So
and
if we listen to the riff, the first three bars are going to be everything do 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 do, and then we'll get do 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 for the last bar.
Mm.
Let me just play the full riff. Flat, natural. Flat, raised, I should say. It's sharp, not natural. So What about the melody? Because we get this kind of stuff in the verse. We have the E moving to an F natural. We have the flat half step going on in the instruments. Does the melody give us a bunch of half steps or something else?
The lyrics are weird. Is he like God?
Well, he's
Everyone, don't forget my son to include everyone. Like,
or you don't think it's a paternal thing talking to the kid? Say your prayers.
I think it's like God.
Or is he the Sandman? He could be the Sandman, right? The God of dreams, sort of, right?
You know, Oniris.
Say again.
Oniris.
Is that Oniris?
It's the Greek god of dreams.
I thought it was Morpheus.
He's probably the god of sleep. Maybe.
Oh,
but Oniris, because they call like people that explore dreams lucidly Onironauts.
Who calls them that?
People in the world.
Other
people
Onironauts. Like other that's a self-identification.
Yes,
got it. Okay.
Self-affirmed Onironaut.
Mark from the future. Not that any of this matters. Morpheus is indeed the god of dreams in Greek mythology. He is the son of Somnus, who is the god of sleep. The Oniros were personifications of, I guess, specific dreams. Like they appear as characters in the Iliad, for example. Zeus would send Agamemnon a bad dream in the form of an Oniros. Let me isolate that. Maybe we'll come back to the lyrics in a few minutes, but let me isolate the melody.
Okay.
Mark style. Pentatonic. No half steps. There's only a couple half steps in the entire song and the melody. It's all whole steps with a couple third leaps. This is a kind of tension of the half steps in most of the instrumental part with no half steps at all. So if we're thinking like, okay, thematically, what are they leaning on? We don't have consensus. But I will say the melody was added. They had the full instrumental jam of this song, apparently, before they added the vocal parts. So they have full knowledge of what's coming in the song before they wrote that melody, which is interesting, which maybe will be relevant in a minute.
I love that.
Thoughts right now?
I'm thinking...
You're like, what's the point of the episode? I haven't got there yet. Go
okay,
ahead.
Cool. I have thoughts. One, I've been thinking about, especially when you played on the piano, there was an album I used to listen to with my daughter as Lullabies. It was Metallica Lullabies, like where they just made all piano music from Metallica songs.
Yeah,
and there's
a bunch
of like...
Not like music boxy though, piano?
No, like beautiful, like...
Not annoying sounding.
Not annoying. Okay. It was like really lovely. And there was like a whole series of all different types of piano music lullabies. So I was just thinking about that. And this idea of like tucking children into sleep, how it's a really like cozy, nurturing... It could be a really lovely moment in early childhood development that you feel safe and warm and like protected.
Totally.
And that's not what this song is giving to me. It's like... feeling very jarred and feeling really traumatic and feeling really scary.
Yeah, I mean, it's like almost SIDS kind of reference. Like they're talking about like, there's that part where they're reading the prayer, right? If I die before I wake.
Yeah.
Dying, the thought that you might die before you wake up. I know that's kind of an odd part of that prayer, but that's very different from a comforting feeling when you're, I don't know. If you're religious though, then it's like, well, I pray to go to heaven should I die, right? Before I wake up.
Well, it doesn't say go to heaven. It says my soul to take. I mean, anyone could take that soul.
Well, I pray the Lord. Not the Sandman or not a demon or something,
right? Yeah, it's like the SIDS piece is tricky, right? It's just tricky to think about. But this idea that the
SIDS being sudden infant death syndrome, right?
This kid's going to sleep allegedly like in kind of, in my eyes, like a really toxic, stressful environment that may not be great for their development. And
toxic because James Hetfield's going right in front of him basically trying to fall asleep. Yeah, that's stressful.
It is stressful. I just imagined like Kirk Hammett like stroking my forehead so I can fall asleep.
Well, that's
overnight.
Comforting in a different
I don't hate it.
You like Kirk Hammett, I guess.
I do. It's the eyeliner for me. But this idea that this poor kid is going to bed in such like a stressful environment and he's saying like, maybe I'll die when I'm asleep and then it'll be better than this. That's how I interpret it, but I'm going weirdly, not uncharacteristically, but darker here.
I get what you're saying, but also that's the part of the song that's not original lyrics, right? That's reciting essentially a common traditional prayer.
Right.
Okay, let's listen to the pre-chorus to see where this all goes.
So sad. I'm really in my head about like childhood trauma right now.
Right. Well, there's also something about like everybody as a kid was scared of the dark or scared of something sometimes and put your head under the covers. Sleep with one eye open. Like, okay, it's the gripping the pillow tight. That is like not a normal, that's not a childhood fear response. I think
no, that's
cover
like,
up, but yeah. Gripping the pillow tight is like you're afraid of something actually. Like bracing yourself almost, yeah. Right? That is, I've never thought of that. It is very disturbing,
yeah.
That image. And this is why Matt P was way cooler.
He's like, this is the moment.
Than before when he's reciting that around a daytime campfire.
Imagine if he recited poetically the lyrics to, what was it?
Nope. Under Pressure by Boyz II Men.
By Boyz II Men. Of their seminal album.
That album did not have lyrics in the cassette booklet. So
I was left to guess.
I didn't know all the Philly 1990s Philly slang. Some of the words I couldn't tell what they were saying.
How dare they not give you the lyrics?
You gotta have the lyrics.
Because we didn't have the internet then. Poor Matt P would have had to been transposing it all.
Right. This he just had to memorize. But what happens in this moment is abruptly it goes up a whole step. We have what might be a key change from E up a whole step, not to F. But to F sharp with basically the same riff playing one whole step higher, meaning two half steps higher. Till the Sandman he goes, sleep with one eye open, gripping your pillow tight. So compare the moves between an E chord to an F sharp chord. Mm. It just sort of goes.
It's scary. It's like it's coming to get us.
But it's not a half step.
No.
That's an interesting thing. They could have gone up a half step. They chose. It's like the whole step one, even though so much of the song, especially the instruments, has been dominated.
It's like that monster creeping and you want it to take like slow steps towards you, but it's just like charging you.
Interesting. That feels like a key change to you or a chord?
I mean, yeah, I'm trying to make some connections.
About the idea of whether this is a key change or just, it could just be a chord. Oh, it goes to an F sharp chord.
You haven't investigated this?
Well.
It's so uncharacteristic.
Well, the idea between have we just shifted to a chord or have we changed key has to do with how it's used and where it goes. So tell me, if it just goes back to E, we just went to an F sharp chord.
Whatever.
So what happens after the pre-chorus into the chorus?
It stays there.
It stays in F sharp.
Yeah.
So the pre-chorus abruptly goes to F sharp minor, and the chorus is just all in F sharp.
And it goes up more as the song goes on, doesn't it?
Well, how did that end there at the end? So here's what happens.
You want him to go up.
Here's what happens at the end of the chorus. Off to never, never land. We're back.
Yeah.
It just abruptly goes to F sharp. Stays there for a bit. So it is a key change. It's not just, oh, we changed chords. No, we have a new do, right? A new one. And then it just abruptly goes back. Right? Just abruptly goes back. And so what we have is an abrupt modulation. Modulation is the fancy pants way of saying a key change. You say modulation to be fancy pants, but essentially you mean you have changed the key. It's actually stupid too, because modulation means other things in music too, especially music technology. So why not just call it a key change?
Whoa. You're telling me that in music theory, things can mean more than one thing?
Definitely, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I noticed.
Yeah, we had an issue with the circle of fifths about that last time, right?
You're so mad about it.
Yeah. So, okay. So what do we have here? This is a modulation, a key change that is not prepared. It's not nuanced. You just slam it. Pejoratively called a truck driver modulation.
Oh, I kind of
love
it. Or
a truck driver gear change.
Oh,
because
not so
you
much.
Just shift. Sometimes, talk about technical terms, direct modulation, abrupt modulation, phrase modulation, because the phrase just immediately goes to a new key. This is as opposed to pivot chord modulations, sequential modulations, common tone modulations, and harmonic modulations. These other types of modulations are set up. This is just, we're in E minor, and then we're in F sharp minor. There is no transition. There is no nuance to it. It just kind of, boom.
It's an abrupt modulation.
Almost like you've shifted the gear in a truck.
I love that.
And so the truck driver gear change is kind of used as a pejorative term, because these are sometimes used for the forces of evil.
Like what? Evil.
I'll play some later. So this song, the pre-chorus and chorus is in a different key, and it just shifts back.
Okay.
The most common truck driver modulation is at the end of the song, going up a half step or a whole step, so the singer can belt really high notes.
I see.
And there's a kind of corniness, obviousness to it.
It's like masturbatory.
It's a little bit masturbatory. And sometimes that can lead to really awesome high notes. I'll play some examples later. But this is almost, I think, in this song, this isn't so he gets high notes. I mean, he does have high notes, but
he's got a great vocal range.
Definitely. Good right. low notes, really good yeah. high notes. This got like a high A or something. He sounds great up there. This is more almost like of a change of palette. Like it's just like, ooh, refreshes your brain a little
right?
bit.
Yeah.
This is not a pejorative. I would not make fun of this modulation. Oh, it's lazy. No, it's kind of awesome. It feels like they just changed the chord, but no, they're staying a whole step up. And I just want to highlight, it is a whole step. It is not a half step. And once again, our melody, not a lot of half steps in there. Whole step action between E and F sharp. All whole steps. Interesting.
It is interesting. It kind of feels like if you're in an abusive situation, how your abuser might start love bombing you halfway through, like an abuse cycle, to make you feel comfortable again, to make you feel like attached again.
How is it like that?
Because it just
is
like
that where we're going, or
that's what I'm that's thinking about. It's just an observation. Because if you think like it's when it had that abrupt modulation and the key raised up and it kind of heightened us a little bit, and mm-hmm. now it's going back to the beginning, it's like helping, trying to regulate us, trying to bring us back to where we started. And I know where the song's going. I know it's going to go up again.
Right.
I know it's a cycle. Well, moment, I'm feeling rested.
I definitely want to talk. Let's talk the brain piece of it. But on that point, let me play one more thing before.
Okay.
And later I'll come back and I'll play other examples of good and bad truck driver gear changes. But during the other parts of the song where we're not guided by this melody, that's all whole steps. It still happens and it's totally just abrupt, but it's not foreshadowed. It just boom happens.
Mm-hmm.
But yet feels sort of grounded in this weird way. So take a listen. Here's the solo. He's so handsome, right?
Oh my gosh.
And then the bridge happens again.
If I die before I wake.
If I die before I wake.
Just gonna abruptly go back up and then shift back down.
I still, baby, don't say a word. And never mind that noise you heard. It's just the beast under your bed.
And of course, the melody's all whole steps, right?
Who's the kid?
Who's the kid? I don't know who the kid is. It's producer Bob Rock's son.
Poor Who's kid. That kid?
The kid gripping his pillow tight.
Like in your closet, in your
actor.
Head.
It's one of those things like when you have a kid actor in like a horror movie, you're like, is that kid actually freaked out by the guy or lady wearing mocap stuff that's supposed to be a monster chasing them around? Like that's it's kind of
no,
strange.
No, because then they see that lady like
they get used to
eating
them.
A turkey sandwich at break.
Yeah, or they have like, ice cream after the
right,
shoot or
like,
whatever. That's
they're
true.
Just
yeah.
like getting in their Prius and going home.
Those kids in their Priuses.
right.
All right. So let's unpack more. So you listed a few things you could talk about at the beginning, and then you also mentioned like abuse and kind of the cyclical nature of that. Where do you want to go with this? We can't talk about all of it because you also got to save some of this for other episodes so that people come back.
But there's too much. There's too many interesting things to talk about all the time. I never know where to go. The low-hanging fruit here is to talk like bedtime routines, but that seems like it doesn't do justice to the weight of this song to be like, you should turn off your phone before bed. Like,
yeah, we don't need to talk. Is that sleep hygiene?
Yeah,
what you said?
Like do the same thing at the same time every night so your body physiologically knows to like go to bed. It's like you can just look in very well mind for that, which is a dumb website. I think that the move.
Whoa, putting well mind on blast.
Actually, I use it so much in class. Like, it's a joke.
Okay. Where are we going?
I'd like to talk about, like, trauma cycles. I think that and like abuse cycles. I think that like is the best path to make some connections.
So you're thinking of this. Look, I played one earlier.
Yes.
One is about, it's based on there's a lot of literary references. What's the book that the lyrics of one are based on? I don't remember. One of the World War One novels, but it's like a guy
like
who's
iron lung or something.
He's had all of his limbs
taken
from him and he's like trapped in this hospital. Like,
right.
They're not afraid to go to really dark places. And so you're positing a scenario that's not just, ooh, don't let the boogeyman get you at night.
Yeah.
But this kid is also afraid of his parents, probably.
I'm positing that like parents are the boogeyman.
Yeah. And the gripping your pillow tight is what makes me
think that
worried that you might be right.
And there's a lot of lyrical nods to this, like, you know, hush little baby, don't say a word. That to me feels
once again with the creepy lullaby lyrics.
It's a creepy lullaby lyric, but like when you put it in this context, it you know, I always tell my kid, like, if another adult tells you to never tell your mom and dad about something, that's for sure something you'd be telling your mom and dad about, right? And I think that like the hush little baby don't say a word lyric to me makes me think of that parenting mantra I have.
Yeah.
Like this idea that this is our secret.
Yeah.
And that seems gross and like not appropriate, right? And also in the song, it talks about this idea that the parenting figure is becoming unreliable and maybe damaging and maybe an abuser for the kid. And that's how I've always interpreted these lyrics. And this idea of like end of childhood innocence, this like fall from safety, these like abuse cycles, all of that's bubbling up for me when you talk about this abrupt modulation in key.
And back,
like forward and back between like being kind of a little bit sharper, a little bit off key, but it like fits in the narrative of the song so much so that if you used the, I don't know what the right word would be, but like the natural key, like if you used E minor with no other interpolations, if it was just pure E minor, the song wouldn't sound right. Like you need those shifts.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to pipe in.
Yeah. Do I understand it?
Well, I'm going to pipe in later. I can't do this on the fly.
Okay.
I will pitch shift the chorus.
Okay.
Down a whole step. So it just starts and stays in E minor.
Right.
It's going to sound, listeners, it'll sound like you'll hear artifacts. It'll sound a little gross, but we're going to hear it if it never, I'll try, if it never changed key, because it's that abrupt. I could just sort of cut there, shift it down a whole step. Okay, everybody, on that note, this is the pre-chorus. In other words, it's going to stay in E minor instead of jumping to F sharp. So what I've done is just pitch shifted the second half of what you're about to hear down. Again, I didn't use any particular fancy software for this, so you're going to hear some audio artifacts. It's just going to sound a little weird. Okay, now here's the full chorus. So I've pitch shifted the whole front part down from F sharp minor back down to regular old E minor, and then it just stays in E minor.
Never land. Yeah.
That's what a psychological effect that's going to have?
Well, the thing that's interesting is because if you were raised in a place without trauma, you're accustomed to having a adult life without trauma. But if you're raised in a really intense moment in childhood that your cortisol levels are high, which is a trauma response, like your nervous system.
You acclimate to stress, basically.
Yes, yeah. And you kind of need, that becomes your baseline, right? So in this song, we're acclimating to these iterations of this key to be a slightly sharp or slightly flat in areas that they wouldn't naturally be. So much so that if it was the natural E minor, it wouldn't sound right to us.
Right.
Our baseline is becoming skewed because of the song. Is that making sense?
Well, it's interesting because if we're talking about like, what is it acclimating us to?
Mm.
The instrumental part mostly is acclimating us to everything being flat by a half step.
Mm-hmm.
The vocal line is not.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shift is a whole step motion.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you acclimating to one thing, and then what you get is not what you've acclimated to, because it doesn't go to F.
Right.
It's not like the payoff, like way back when we did our Lizzo episode, I was talking about what's this weird F chord in the key of A flat? Why is it F major? And then like way in the middle eight of the song, it pays off. Well, the F leads to B flat minor.
Right.
Cool. This is almost paying off something that isn't foreshadowed. The vocal melody kind of foreshadows the whole step move, but the instrumental groove would be foreshadowing something different, and we don't get it. And that is disruptive, maybe.
Right.
But it works really well. And part of why it works is it goes right back.
Right.
It's abrupt. It is disturbing. It's shocking. It's
but
cool
it's,
in that way.
It's cool. And it's cyclical. Like it in some ways for me, when I listen to it, like there's resolution, right?
Yeah.
It just is not a natural resolution. And I don't know. I've been thinking a lot as you're talking about how trauma wires you in a way towards like a heightened response. Right. And then I think about adverse childhood experiences. Have I talked about
with
adverse,
that term? I don't think so, no.
Or we would call it ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. There's a 10-item questionnaire. It's called the ACE inventory, or you can get an ACE score from it. And anyone can look it up. It's a really easy questionnaire to administer because it's meant to be administered to kids. And from this, it's like, we say inventory, it's like a test, like questions you answer.
Sure.
Like when you go to the doctor, they give you a depression screen, and it's like a series of 10 questions that'll screen against depression. And this ACE questionnaire is meant to help determine level of childhood trauma. And from your ACE score, we can determine like long-term health outcomes. Like we know if you have a high ACE score as a 10-year-old, you're going to have a greater chance for depression growing up, a greater chance for obesity, diabetes, heart disease growing up, just based on your ACE score. So incorporating adverse childhood experiences into holistic medical practice is like a really great path forward for like the mind-body connection and the mental health and like all-purpose, I guess, health industry. So the thing about ACE scores is everyone's got one. No one's getting out without some score on the ACE inventory.
Right.
Like you could easily look it up and see, like if you grew up in a household that parents yelled, that's a note, right? If your parents were divorced, if one of them was incarcerated, if your parents abused drugs or alcohol.
Or there was a war in your town and like you were being bombed, right? Like things
maybe,
would contribute.
Yeah. A lot of it is like interpersonal family stuff. Though.
Not situation, not you had food insecurity for your early childhood.
I'd have to look and see, but a lot of them have the flavor of like what's happening in the household.
Okay. I understand.
Which is really interesting because there's all that stuff outside of the household too. But a really great analogy I heard about like trauma response is, you know, that outside trauma exists, like the world around you exists, you know, and sometimes kids do feel like there's a monster chasing them and they have to run from it. Maybe that monster's a bully at school, or maybe that monster's, depending on the kid, like the government or outside agencies coming to take their family apart. But that maybe that monster, maybe that like bear chasing you is your dad. And every time you walk in your front door, you have that heightened cortisol response, that heightened feeling like of the fight or flight moment. But that fight or flight moment happens at bedtime or happens around the dinner table. And how you get kind of accustomed to that as you move through your life. Even if the bear goes away, you still have that heightened trauma response. So you could have heightened anxiety, heightened depression.
You get used to the key change.
You get used to the key change. Yeah.
So can I throw a little cold water on this interpretation?
Yeah.
The hush little baby, don't say a word. Mm-hmm. Never mind the voice you heard, I think, or the noise you heard. Mm-hmm. It's just the beast under the bed, in your closet, in your head.
Right.
So, you know, there's historic drug abuse in Metallica, right, and probably, you know, mental illnesses in that band. Yeah. Is this actually about just the demon is you, your own thing? Yeah. Is that kid, is he talking to himself, right? In the past, maybe?
Or maybe it's just the abuser gaslighting him.
Okay.
Saying, oh, this
blaming,
is...
Or yeah, victim blaming and stuff.
Well, it's all the same. Well, not all the same. But yeah, this idea that, no, it's there's nothing to worry about. This is normal. This is what a normal dad does at bedtime.
Yeah.
This is like a normal situation. You're crazy. I'm not crazy. How dare you even say I'm crazy?
Yeah.
It's you're the problem. So that's how I read it. It's like an abuser gaslighting his victim. But
wow,
I tend to go darker.
Yeah, I guess so. Darker than E minor? It's hard to go darker.
Nothing's darker than E minor.
It's E flat minor. Oof. For tapping into the emotional void.
I like it so much better.
What,
I
you
do.
Like the, I like the Excel song more?
Yeah, I like the
not
the
bad for a spreadsheet.
Little trill at the end.
It's a yeah, it's cool.
I like that. It's cool.
All right. So was that a stupid enough transition to go back to me playing some examples
get
truck
me
driver
out of
modulations?
My head. In my closet, in my bed or whatever.
That's right. In your head. Okay. So Whitney Houston.
Oh, great.
Probably done to show off vocals, right?
Great.
I Will Always Love You, 1992. Notably, the original version, Dolly Parton, does not do the truck driver modulation at the end. This just goes up a step. No prep, abrupt, to show off some high notes. Dolly is diva enough, but apparently we needed to amplify the diva-ness and the show-offiness with Whitney. Yes,
but above all this, I wish you.
From the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Yeah, that's right. Did you ever see the movie?
No. I have like images in my head from it, but I think it's from this music video of like Kevin Costner swooping
holding her. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I never saw that.
I know, I'm right.
Definitely heard the song. All right, Living on a Prayer, 1986, Bon Jovi. There is one transitional chord, but it's not a chord that would lead you to the key, so it sort of doesn't help. It sounds like, ooh, key change, but that the chord they play doesn't actually lead to the new key. This is G going up a whole third to B flat. I think it's to show off the really high vocals.
Yeah. Very fun sing-along song.
It's hard
when there's a GB band playing that song. Nice. You're like, this is the moment.
Are they gonna do the key change?
Are they gonna do it? Are they gonna do it? And they do.
Full disclosure, that one I will, with full condescension, call a truck driver modulation. It's kind of a little too much for me.
I feel like you're very pejorative about the term, but like, we, it's okay to be a truck driver. Like,
oh,
what's
no,
so bad about
it's
it?
Not about it's
you're so upper
it's not
class.
This is what the truck drivers do. It's the idea of shifting the
no,
gear.
No, I get it. But what's wrong with that?
First gear to second
you're
gear.
You're just jealous.
It's because the term comes from the idea that you want to have nuance to your moves, right? It's blatant. And I think in I Will Always Love You, it works. I think in Enter Sandman, it works. It might be a bit much in Living on a Prayer.
I think it's showmanship.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, look, if you got it, flaunt it.
That's how I feel.
Johnny B, he can sing the really high notes. So Speaking of people who can sing, who already came up this episode, let's circle back to our Boys to Men's On Bended Knee, 1994. This is not from the album with Under Pressure.
This is Boys to Men 2.
Boys to Men 2, the sequel. Boys,
this is where they become
boys,
the men.
Boys II, Men II. Yeah, eventually.
Still not, though. They're still touring as Boys to Men.
That's right. This one starts in E flat, and then goes up a half step to E.
No, I don't believe I love terminal. I'm down on my knees, begging you, please.
We come go home.
Can we come back, baby? I just wanna come back.
But then it happens again, another half step to F. And that chord, there's a prep chord in there to set it up, but it's just boom, prep chord, go, right?
It's good. It's good.
And you can imagine a world like a parody version that just keeps going and going and going.
Is there one?
Probably. It'd be really hard to sing.
What's Weird Al doing?
What's Weird Al?
He's
doing
originals now, right?
He does it all, man. Did you see Weird Al? He just played here a couple months ago. I didn't go.
You didn't go?
I didn't go. One more example.
All right.
This is one I actually don't like, even though I love this song. The listeners heard me talk a lot about Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
We have mixed feelings about Michael Jackson, to say the least. Listen to that episode, one of the last episodes of season one. This song, Baby Be Mine, from Thriller, in my defense of using it.
Mm-hmm.
A, this was written by Rod Temperton.
Rod Temperton wrote
a lot of his good songs. Two, I'm kind of being negative in bringing it up.
Okay.
I'm kind of dissing them. So there's all these fancy chords. We're in the key of C sharp minor. And then we just go up a half step to D minor. And there's something about it that just doesn't. I love this song. Maybe my favorite song on Thriller. It just sounds weird. Listen to this gear shift modulation. Does that sound good to you?
No.
The key change, there's something about it, and I think I know what it is. I think it's from the production reality of the synth having vibrato. The synth has wobbly pitch, and the moment when this shift, when the chord shifts, it sounds like out of tune to me.
Everything as well could be the rhythm that I live. So baby, my girl. I don't like it.
There's something about it that feels weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's shifting down and not up.
It's going up a half step.
Is it?
The notes might be, but it's going up, I think, a half step.
It needs to be.
It's going up some amount.
That doesn't seem as truck drivery as me. I need to like go more. Were the other examples only a half step? Or were they more?
They were. I Will Always Love You was a whole step. Living on a Prayer is a minor third. On Bend a Knee was half step.
Oh.
It's all about how. It's about the execution, right?
Yeah.
And this one just is something about it.
There wasn't that like lifting moment. It like felt like gross.
Again, problems with Michael Jackson, definitely. This is my favorite song on Thriller, and that moment just doesn't work for me.
All right.
So all of this, where they do it at the end as a climax, is by far more common than what we have in this song, mm-hmm. where it's going back and forth. Two examples, and then I'm done, of songs where it goes back and forth. So two little clips to establish each key. 1967, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Also known as Sounds Just Like Oasis, right?
I think they heard Oasis and were like, let's get in the time machine and go back.
Starts in the key of A and just randomly goes to G.
Mm.
Weird, right? And what happens at the end? Just goes back from G to A.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Oh, follow her down to a bridge by a fountain, her rocking horse people.
It doesn't have that like gear shift feeling as much for me.
Even though there's a tom going boom. Boom,
but it's
boom,
not like boom. You think of Whitney. I think that's the best example because it is all of a sudden like you're buckle up.
High gear.
Yeah.
This is going down a key.
Yeah.
Though the vocals are really high there. What are you at with that song, Lucy in the Sky?
I mean, I think it's if you've been listening to the podcast, you have to know that like I've got into that song as an adolescent.
I've
been paying attention.
Hot take. Big fan.
Context clues here.
It's not my favorite Beatles song,
but like you kind of had, if you grew up in my specific cohort, like you had to
had
like that song.
Lucy and the Sky of Diamonds.
You had to.
All right.
P.S. hated it. You know what else is towering over my head? It's probably that spider.
We lost track of it, everybody. That's a problem. So.
Oh, gosh.
Last example.
Okay.
Somebody we already covered. Alumnus song, not just artist, alumnus song from the podcast. Undone by Weezer.
Great.
1994.
Parentheses, the sweater song.
The sweater song. Thank you. Close parentheses
close
afterwards,
parentheses,
too. If you don't close the parentheses, it's still going.
It's madness.
Through all of these. And then if they have another song with parentheses, the parentheses
like,
are
double
nested.
Double close parentheses. What are
oh
we
my
doing?
Gosh. So the first section of the song, I think, I don't remember, we're in like G or G flat or something like that. I mentioned this briefly in the episode, but we start in one key. We just pop up to a new key out of nowhere. Same chord progression, new key, and then it just goes back.
All these songs are so fun to sing.
That's interesting. Well, I think there's something about, especially the ones where it's at the end, where it makes it high. It's like anthemic, right?
Right.
It's very rah-rah to do this kind of key change, as opposed to like a pivot chord modulation, which I plan on bringing back later
in this season.
Can't wait. Is a little more of like, you don't notice it's happening and then it happened and you're like, whoa. And but you're either whoa or you actually don't know it happened.
Right.
Like there's sometimes you'll hear a song or I'm learning a song on the guitar. I'm like, well, I didn't even know there was a key change in this. And it's only when I'm looking at the keys on the piano or the guitar and I'm realizing I am in a different key. That's not what this is. There's like a explosion happening in the song that is a key change, everybody. Right. Like you want to high five the person doing karaoke as
yes,
they do the key change,
for
right?
Sure.
And it tends to match well with a song that is an anthem or a song that's really rah-rah or, you know, a dramatic moment like in Enter Sandman, even
like
though that's not triumphant like this one is.
Yeah. Like sometimes it's explicit and sometimes it's not.
Right. Totally.
Just
so,
like Trauma.
Oh, boy.
Like I said at the beginning of this episode, I like Metallica quite a bit. And if you looked at me, you wouldn't be like, that's a Metallica fan. But I like especially this album, especially Injustice for All. I listen to quite often because it's a catharsis for me. Like if I'm feeling cranky, I'll play this in my car as loud as possible and just sing along as loud as I can. And it feels like such an emotional release.
Sure.
So my question for you is, do you have music that you listen to as an emotional release that's uncharacteristic of the stereotypical music that Mark P. listens to?
Whoa.
It's a hard question for you because you listen to a lot of different music.
What's stereotypical Mark P, right?
Well, like
cool vocal harmonies
like
and a good
synth
drum beat.
Pop,
yeah.
Or like just pop music.
Indie pop or
like classical.
I would never really listen to classical music cathartically.
Right.
Unless I was listening to like.
Like Ride of the
some
Valkyries.
Really heavy, no, like Contus in Memory of Benjamin Britten by Arvo Pärt that's like heavy and sad
right.
and slow.
No, famously.
Right. I think that actually was, I mentioned that, I played a sample in the Minimalism sidetrack, everybody. Check it out. That's a great question. I'll give an answer. Cathartic. I don't have like, oh, I'm angry. I want to listen. I want to be all like riled up. Listen to some Rage Against the Machine. It's something that's extremely nostalgic. Like I will, once every couple of years, put on like, Another Bad Creation album, like with Aisha or whatever.
ABC.
And I will listen to something that I listened to when I was a kid, like a kid or Weird Al album or something. And it's more like to pull myself out of my adulthood on some level. Not that Weird Al doesn't, I don't still like it as an adult, but especially something stupid like the Ninja Turtles album that we talked about in the sidetrack that I had when I was a first grader. That is not the first time I've heard that song as an adult. I've listened to that album once through probably in the last 20 years, which is pretty wild since it's totally kid music. something that doesn't fit within my ABC. I mean, Aisha, first of all, is actually a pretty damn good song.
It's a great
song. And Boyz II Men coming up a third time, they sound amazing singing the chorus. But it's not within my normal wheelhouse. Like the sort of little kids making New Jack Swing is not the kind of music I normally listen to. But I'll put it on sometimes as a way to kind of connect me to my...
like
my roots,
heal sort of. Your inner child.
Kinda, yeah. Right? Is that a good enough answer?
Yeah,
I
think that it's like things that it's surprising. Like I'd be surprised. I know you like pop music, and maybe I wouldn't be surprised if you told me like when you go running, you listen to Sabrina Carpenter. That actually would like make sense to me.
I mean, when we were prepping for the last year's Grammy episode, yeah. I most definitely listened to her while running. I think though, I listen to, I mean, sometimes I am listening to pop music. Sometimes I'm listening to metal or punk on a run. But
I'd be surprised to hear you listen to like KRS-One or Tribe Called Quest or that type of like.
I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me
though.
Too.
So
we need to talk about that more.
But how is that like KRS-One is like way in your head, hip hop.
Right.
Not that it's not at all as a negative, but like super wordy and sharp. Mm-hmm. Incisive lyrics hip hop shouldn't be that surprising for some like academic to be listening
and
to.
And then if
right?
you like, you can make connections between that and like Hamilton, you could easily make those connections because Hamilton's hip hop.
Sure, but
in
like
its language and its meter.
What does that have to do with KRS-One? I feel like we're
off
afield.
Topic. It's fine.
I'll say this one last thing about that though. I wonder if 10 years from now, instead of listening to ABC once every few years, I'm going to like put on The Wiggles or like something like right. that to like reconnect me to what it was like back when I had little like when I'm an empty nester one day, am I going to be like, you know what? Let's listen to a Raffi album because it's
like,
been so long. You
let's
know?
Get Frozen 2 back in the mix.
That's actually a good example because some of the music and like these Disney, like there's a song from
K-pop Demon Hunters.
No, that's all Nicole wants to talk about these days. What's the song not, we don't talk about Bruno, not from, but there's another song from Encanto, the reggaeton tune.
With
Surface
the,
Pressure or something.
Oh,
that's like
great.
Actually a legitimate good song.
It's such a good song.
But I never listened to it.
Floor crack, the straw in the stack, that breaks the camel's back. What breaks the camel's back? It's fresh like a drip, 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 that'll never stop. Whoa. Pressure that'll tip, tip, tip till you just go pop. Whoa-oh. Give it to your sister, your sister's older. Give her all the heavy things we can't shoulder. Who am I if I can't run with the ball?
Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote all the music for that.
Did he write that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't listen to that song.
Yeah.
It's actually awesome.
Yeah.
It's probably the best like Disney, this is me as a character song ever.
Mm-hmm.
I never listen to it. There's going to come a time when I'm going to get nostalgic and I'm going to listen to it again. Oh, let's put on some Encanto and then I'll be reminded. Actually, I should just listen to this song as a good song.
It's a really good song.
Shout out Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Come on the pod.
Surprise appearance in a Metallica episode.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vatra and hosted and produced by Mark Poppany. You can email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com and give us a follow on social media. Nevermind the Music is also part of the Lorehounds Network. Please join the conversation on their Discord server. Thanks for listening.